Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, today is Thursday, January 12th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I am Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. Send us thoughts and questions. NFL season, regular season is done. We crowned the champion in college football. That's where we're going to start. Last Monday, we saw Georgia blow out TCU 65-7. The game was never close. They were up 38-7 at the half. The Bulldogs finished 15-0. Bennett throws for 304 yards and four touchdowns. He runs for two touchdowns. Guys, game was never close. Darren?
Now we're going to kick with Kevin first.
Wow, Kevin.
First off, boys, thank you. You guys were great the last 2 weeks. Good to be back.
TCU, you were sorely missed.
TCU gets the ball first. First play of the game, false start. Not a good omen. Get behind the chains, go three and out. Georgia takes over, 57 yards, touchdown, boom, 7-0 right away. TCU second possession, Darius Davis fumbles, picked up by Georgia. The only time TCU's defense showed up, actually, they held him to a field goal. And you felt like, okay, maybe, you know, 10-0, okay. And TCU comes out. They get the big 60-yard pass from Duggan to Davis, eventually punching in, 10-7. Okay, maybe if you get a stop here, maybe it's still a game. But Georgia just comes right back, four plays, 70 yards, boom, touchdown, 17-7. And what I thought was the turning point of the game, the next TCU drive, they get a little bit of a drive going. They get third and long. They were able to get it down to a fourth and six at the Georgia 47. Now, you know you haven't stopped them yet on defense. And I think Sonny Dykes went a little too conservative there. I think when you're in Georgia territory, you're down to a fourth and six after being like 3rd and 18. I think you have to go for it there and take a chance and try to get points because punted that ball away. They punted it. Yes, it was a great punt, but Georgia goes 11 plays, 92 yards, 24-7, and then comes the two picks, two ensuing touchdowns by Georgia, 38-7, game over. And like you said, I think that punt was the wrong decision by Dykes. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the turning point was when they had the opening kickoff, by the way the game went. Not a lot to talk about. Here's the one thing, and you guys know I like TCU. I have my TCU sweatshirt. I was all excited. I showed it to you guys a couple weeks ago when they won. You know, TCU was pulled off a nice upset against Michigan, and they were a nice story. But what sometimes happens in big games, when you get that upset, you don't get the matchup that you should get in the championship game. And we had that here. And because Michigan's defense was not going to get brutalized by Georgia the way TCU's was. And the funny part about the TCU defense, what threw me off, is they played a 3-3-5, which is not exactly a big stealth defense. But their struggles were covering the pass and wide sweeps, which should have been perfect for their speed. They actually did a really good job of stopping them up the gut. It was amazing that they were just able to go wide on them all day. I mean, I would be lying to say I stayed through 65-7. I did not. No. I at halftime, I went to bed, and I was thankful that I got some sleep on a night of a championship game because it was over. And, yep, you know, they're a nice team, and it was a nice story, and it was a great job by Dykes. I agree with you on the punt at the time. I was saying it, like, why would you punt now? You're like an air raid Hal Mummy disciple, you know, of just throwing the ball around. You got a chance to get the momentum back a little bit. They gave it up. The punt was great. You're saying, all right, if they get a three and out here, maybe they get good field position. But they didn't. They never showed a sign at all of stopping Georgia the whole game. You know, Stetson Bennett looked better than he normally looks. He looked great. I mean, he's a good player. He looked amazing. He looked like he was the first pick in the draft. You know, all the skill athletes just looked like they were superior on Georgia's team. I don't really know what more to say. The best team won. And unfortunately for the rest of the country, they got to witness a really horrible game.
Yeah.
Lowest rated game in the history of the college football playoff championship game. Lowest rated one they've ever had. I guess no one thought TCO would give them a battle. G, any thoughts?
The only other thing was is that it was the largest margin of victory in a college football title game. The difference was 58 points. The prior largest difference was 28. So, I mean, they just completely destroyed that number. But other than that, I mean, I don't think there was anything else to say unless you guys have something else to bring up.
Kev's got one more point.
Well, I just want to ask you guys, Stetson Bennett, any chance of backup quarterback NFL, or is he draftable?
Yeah, round? I mean, and listen, we saw McElroy get drafted and be on our team. It's a similar type of size player. I mean, I think McElroy might have thrown the ball a lot less than Stetson Bennett in college at Alabama. So I think that if he could get drafted, and now the short quarterback is kind of in. It's nouveau, so to speak. You know, the kid at Alabama is not a big kid. He's going to be a top 10 pick. He could go two. You know, so there's a lot of little variables, but I think he's draftable. I think he's a fifth, sixth round pick. I don't think he goes high, but I think he gets drafted.
What I find interesting is he's already 25 years old. He's older than Justin Herbert, Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy, all in the playoffs. Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Jordan Love.
No, he's definitely – and the funny thing is the last time I remember a quarterback this old getting drafted, it was Chris Wehnke. He was 27, started up his own game, won the opener, lost the rest of the season. I think it was against Minnesota. They won the opener, and nobody had him, and they won it. And you're like, wow, Carolina's going to be pretty good. They didn't win the rest of the year.
Yep.
But, yeah, interesting stuff. Listen, TCU right now is like a preseason top five for next year. Let's see. They do have a lot of guys returning. I mean, Duggan's not one of them. And the stories about Duggan are really impressive. You know, kid from Council Bluffs, Iowa. He got a few offers, chose to go to TCU, lost his starting job before the season started, got it back due to injury, and really just took off with it. So hats off to TCU for a good year, but we did not get a good final.
And I think Duggan's another guy who's going to be the late round draft pick too.
I agree. I agree.
All right, we will move on to the NFL. So there were not that many surprises, not many twists with the playoff seedings last week. We had a couple. We'll talk about a couple of them. In the AFC, the obvious one was the loser leaves town match between Jacksonville and Tennessee. Jacksonville pulls it off. The other one was that we had New England lose and Miami win to take the number 7 seed. In the NFC, the only one we had, Seattle wound up winning, so they just secured the 7 seed. They were planned to be the 7 seed before it. Let's talk a couple of the seedings. Anything that stands out to you guys, and then we can get into some different things.
Well, I'll start with my biggest gripe, which will be different than most people's biggest gripe. You know, them not replaying that game. I knew they should have canceled it that night. I agree. But the team that gets screwed is Cincinnati. It's not Buffalo. It's not Kansas City. One team gets screwed at Cincinnati. If Cincinnati wins that game, they're hosting the 2-3 game against Buffalo. They took that away from them. They were so worried about Buffalo getting their seeding, not getting screwed, that they screwed Cincinnati. It is a joke, to be honest with you. Cincinnati got screwed so royally in this. They have to go to Buffalo, and they – listen, who knows who's going to win the game? They're up 7-3 and moving the ball. Burrow looks like he's in focus, but anything can change. They could have lost that game, 31-10. We have no idea.
Yeah,
but at the same time, they did all this to make sure Buffalo didn't get screwed, and they didn't even seem to give a damn about Cincinnati. I'm not a Bengal fan. I don't really care. The Chiefs have no complaint to me if they have to play in a neutral field because they lost to Buffalo during the season. Buffalo has no complaint for it either because we don't know if they would have won. But Cincinnati getting screwed. If you're going to do the neutral field thing, you got to do it for both. Otherwise, you play the damn game. Otherwise, you play the game Tuesday night or Wednesday night and move the season back a day. Ended on Monday, ended on Tuesday. What you did was you killed the team. I'm not saying Cincinnati can't win in Buffalo, but you made it that much harder. And they didn't deserve that. Cincinnati was nothing but class that night. Did everything right. Taylor's at the hospital. They did everything correct. They tried to screw them in the Baltimore thing. If they would have lost to Baltimore, it would have been a coin tip for that. But they didn't think about the Cincinnati-Buffalo game. To me, it's a crime. Kev?
The NFL, I think, got a huge break, the fact that Cincy did beat Baltimore. Yep. At least that took that part out of it. I see both ways. Yes, Cincinnati lost a chance to catch Buffalo and tie them in the standings. They both have played 16 games, though, and Buffalo has a better record.
They were playing each other.
They're playing each other. Yes.
Kansas City has a half-game lead on Buffalo. If we're going to go by that, Kansas City should have got the home field. They should have done the coin toss. I would have rather that than a neutral field, by the way.
I would prefer
a little excitement in the crowd.
I prefer the coin toss there between Buffalo and Kansas City if it gets to there.
Me too. I want a home field because now it's going to be like watching the freaking Sugar Bowl. Half the crowd's this, half the crowd's that. It sounds, there's nothing exciting about it. And are they going to play it southern climate or indoors? No, play it in Green Bay. Play it in Cleveland. Play it somewhere cold. These are cold weather teams. Don't do this crap with this warm weather where it's not that close. You want to make it closer to Buffalo? Play it in Cleveland. Or play it in Foxborough. Or play it at MetLife.
About MetLife, yeah.
You know, if you want to be closer to Kansas City, because they have the lead, play it in Green Bay. Play it somewhere where it's a little bit chilly. But I feel like they were so worried about Buffalo, and they really could give a damn about Cincinnati. I just think that was wrong. G, thoughts?
Yeah. Listen, honestly, I don't think any way the NFL played it was going to help. I think they did the best they could. I think no matter which way they did this, there was going to be a problem. I mean, I think Kev has a huge point because if Cincinnati doesn't beat Baltimore last week, the whole thing becomes a mess. It really does. Well,
that would have been a real joke.
I mean, you would have had teams all over the place and coin tosses, and it just the whole thing becomes just a big mess. So I do think Kev is correct that they did catch a break with that. But listen, I think they didn't know what to do with this. And you're right. Cincinnati probably winds up getting hurt by this a lot. But I think this is the way they're going to have to do it, and we're going to see what happens now.
Should have played the game on Tuesday or Wednesday. That's just my take.
I know. Listen, the understanding is they really just didn't want to push it back a week. And
you didn't have to. You got to push it back a day or two. That's all you had to do.
And listen, there were other ways of getting around this. I actually talked to you about this a week ago, not on the podcast, but – you know, I mean, they did have an option, Kevin, and they could have done this, which it wouldn't have been great, but you could have played all the NFC playoffs this week and the AFC playoffs the following week.
Yep.
And you would have wound up giving up the week in between the Super Bowl, you know, the playoffs and the Super Bowl, but they don't want to do it.
We have to keep that Pro Bowl skills competition this year.
Yeah, thank God. There's going to be dodgeball and they're going to be playing some golf. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
I have no dog in the fight with Cincinnati. I just feel like they did everything in their power to make everything awkward for Cincinnati. And it should have been a coin toss between Buffalo and Kansas City. Have a home field. We shouldn't be playing antiseptic games like the Super Bowl. We shouldn't be. It should be, you know, a home team. If it's Buffalo, great. If it's Kansas City, great. But, you know, I don't know. I felt like they went out of their way to make sure Buffalo was taken care of, and they didn't do the same for Cincinnati. Just a thought. But let's talk about the games.
Okay, so we'll go through the AFC. We'll go through the NFC stuff. The Giants are in, so we're gonna hold off talking about them. But let's talk about the Jets a little bit. It's a loss to the Dolphins. A lot of crazy stuff happened in that game. It was a good defensive game.
Offensive game depends on how you look at it.
Why don't you guys talk to me a little bit about the Jets? You guys are the Jet fans.
Well, going into the game, and I think Darren would agree with me, when you've got Joe Flacco starting because Mike White just hanged up, and he showed in Seattle that his ribs were hurting.
He had five broken ribs. They didn't tell us that.
Yeah. And Zach, of course, could not play. So you stuck with Joe Flacco, and you've got Fant and Brown and Herbig all out. So now you're down to, you know, I think 10th string offensive lineman, you knew the Jets were not going to be able to score touchdowns at all. They got a break that they were facing Skylar Thompson. Luckily, that kept their offense in check. Yeah, just not surprised by the outcome. Obviously, going into the offseason, we know they need offensive linemen. We need a quarterback decision. They have, I think they have to bring in a veteran. Carr, Garoppolo, who knows? We'll talk about that later on. And now they also need a new offensive coordinator since it was announced Wednesday that LaFleur will not be coming back. So they need somebody in there who knows what the hell he's doing and try to fix the offense. Because the defense, they've got some free agency decisions to make. They have to get Quinnen locked up to a long-term contract. I think they need to sign his brother Quincy back. They need a little help in the safety position. Definitely some positives this year. Definitely love seeing the progression of Garrett Wilson. This guy's a stud. You're excited next year to see Breece Hall coming back. You need to see Elijah Vera Tucker coming back. And we'll see what else Joe Douglas can do. I'm very glad that Woody seems to at least have a little patience. I think Douglas and Salah are on the right track. I think it would have been a huge mistake to get rid of one or both. Jets have been too much change constantly. Every 2 years, it feels like they have a new coach. I want to see Douglas and Salah have a chance here 3, 4, 5 years before we make a decision. If you know, 2 years from now, if they're sitting there and they're 4-13 again, yeah, obviously you have to fire them. But as long as they keep making progress like they have been, got to go for it. But we need that quarterback and we need the offensive line. Those are the two biggest things. Darren?
Yeah, well, just to what you said, Flacco was Flacco. He wasn't awful. He was just Flacco. He can do what he can do. Funniest part of Flacco was before the game, he's out there with Tyreek Hill and his kids, and his one kid is wearing a Tyreek Hill jersey. He goes up the hill, and Hill signs that jersey. You can tell the kid didn't even want to root for the Jets. That's okay. O-line was banged up. I mean, you're down to Remmers. You're down to – I can't even pronounce the other kid's name, Ogbuwe or whatever.
Ogbuwe or something.
Yeah, whatever. He sucks. You know, the two guys that started every game are probably my least favorite linemen on the team. You know how I feel about – we need a center. Damn it, we need a damn center. The confusing part for me with the offense was, okay, a couple of weeks ago you have Streveler coming in for the Jacksonville game. Now, you know you're playing Flacco. You're going to come up with a Taysom Hill series for Streveler just to see if you can move it? I mean, am I the only one watching the games? I mean, let the kid come in one series, a quarter, or a couple plays just to mix it up. I mean, what are you doing? The offensive lineman can't sustain blocks anyway. So you're better off having a quarterback that can just pick a hole and run. They didn't even try. They got 11 first downs for the game. Again, the D played hard. I thought the horse collar tackle on Quincy Williams at the end of the game was bull. He grabbed him by the freaking jersey. That gave him the field goal to win the game. I mean, so they really did go out of their way. Flacco was pretty predictable. 33 pass attempts, 17 to Wilson, 16 to the rest of the team. He didn't even try to get the other guys involved. They all knew where it was going every play. Garrett's doing the best he can, but he's got two guys around him on every single play. They just can't run the ball. Salah, 6-game losing streak. You got to hold him accountable for it. I agree with you. I didn't want to see him get fired. I still hope they don't, but it should be back, in my opinion. But he still has to take some of the blame for the 6-game losing streak. Like you mentioned, LaFleur got let go yesterday. All the reports, I heard mixed reports, and then it seems like everybody's saying he was gone by the end of the day. So I didn't catch anything today, but that's what it seems like. And we have plenty of time to talk quarterbacks, like you said, Kev. I just thought that they gave that game to Miami with that horrible horse collar tackle on Quincy Williams, which was not. The defense played hard. I felt bad that they didn't get a lot to show for it. That's just my take. The postmortem on the Jets is a little sad.
And for the gamblers, a big safety at the end.
Huge.
11-6.
The 3.5-point spread. Gamblers would love that safety.
If you thought about the game before it started, that could have been the over, too, if they were smart.
Yeah.
Probably should have been like 15. I know it was in the 30s. I'm just saying. All right, G. So that's our Jet take.
Okay.
Before we go to the other teams, what did you think of your kid? What did you think of your fifth-round pick? Played very well against Dallas Howell. Is he someone to look at or no? I was impressed. A couple of years ago, he was talked about as a first-round talent, okay? He had a bad senior year or junior year, whatever the last year he had in college, and he fell to a fifth-round pick. His build is similar to Hurts, even though I don't think he could squat 800. But do you think he's got a shot? I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
No.
I thought he looked good.
I thought the kid looked good. I thought he had a good game. I thought Dallas was sloppy as hell and had a huge, huge bad game, which opened the door for a lot of that stuff. I don't think he's the answer. Could he be on the roster? Maybe, depending on what you do with Heinicke. It's possible, but I don't think he's the answer.
The interesting thing is our teams are very similar. You have to sign Payne in the worst way, like we have to sign Williams. Payne had 11 and a half sacks, had the most tackles for loss in the league. Nobody talks about him, but he's a great defensive tackle. Quinnen Williams is our version of that. Led the team in sacks, a lot of tackles for loss, was dealing with double teams all season long. They don't get double team Payne as much as they do Williams because, you know, the other guys on the Washington D-line are really good. You guys need corners. We need safeties. You know, I mean, LaMarcus Joyner is not the answer. I'm fine with Whitehead. I just need a free safety that can freaking play. And LaMarcus Joyner didn't play in that game, but he's been below average at best. I love my corners. I don't know. I think the Jets have a chance. I think the two teams are on a similar path. They both need a quarterback that's going to stabilize and make them better. Because when I look at the Jets receivers, I like them. When I look at Washington's receivers, I like them too.
Yeah.
I think McLaurin's really good. Dotson looked great the other day. They've got players, man. And Curtis Samuel, and we got Berrios and Corey Davis. There's a lot of good athletes out there. Both have tight ends too. It's just no one to get them the ball consistently.
I agree. Let's talk some AFC. So Chiefs won. They take the one seed. Buffalo wins. They take the two seed. They beat the Patriots. They knock the Patriots out. Cincinnati is the three seed. Jacksonville had a big win against Tennessee on Saturday. They won the game 2016. They finished 9-8. We talked about this about 4 weeks ago, and we actually came to the conclusion that Jacksonville probably wasn't going to be able to get in because they just needed too many things to happen, and they needed to really just pound these victories out, and Tennessee just needed to lose every game. Well, it just so happened that Tennessee lost every game. Tennessee's got some problems that they're gonna have to straighten out. I love Vrabel, but the quarterback situation needs to be settled. You know, it can't be that if Tannehill goes down, you have absolutely nobody to play. And then the wide receiver issue has got to be brought up with them. Seem like their offensive line, once one or two of these guys went down, there's no depth. So I think that's gonna be an issue, Darren.
I thought Dobbs was actually better than Lawrence was the other night. Dobbs, he's not the answer, Chi. I'm not saying he is.
He's
28 years old. Dobbs gave you everything he could give you.
Oh, absolutely.
They lost on a sack fumble type thing that he didn't see coming, and then that was it. But Lawrence had open receivers he was missing. I was a little surprised. I think he was a little amped up, which I didn't expect because playing at Clemson, he played in all these huge games. Tennessee actually controlled the game for a lot of it. They played pretty well. Henry, you know, was getting hit every time. He was getting that 3 yards a pop, but they were moving the ball a little bit. And again, the Waynes for Dobbs thing was a definitely upgrade. Vrabel had him playing hard. I don't think Tannehill is back. I think Tannehill ends up in Atlanta, somewhere like that, where he gets reunited down there with Arthur Smith, who had got a lot out of him. I could see that being the move. And I see Tennessee having to go after one of these free agent quarterbacks as well. I could see that being the team that makes the run at like an Aaron Rodgers. I could see that the team that makes like a run in that way. But they're out. So let's talk about Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Etienne didn't have much of a game. It was 17 yards rushing, I think. You know, Kirk has become a real go-to player, and Engram has become the star every Giant fan feared that he would be when he left. You know, it's just one of those things. Sometimes you just need that change of scenery. It's going to be a great matchup. The Jacksonville Charger game, they played in week two. Every one of these matchups this weekend, they played already. 38-10. All six. 38-10. First time these two teams met. I expect to see a different Charger squad this time out. Kev, any thoughts on the game the other night?
I think, like you said, week three is just so long ago. You're going to see a much different game.
Absolutely.
Just surprising because you look at Trevor Lawrence, once you got to the bye week, around the last eight games or so, 15 touchdowns, only two interceptions. He had looked like he had elevated his game. He looked like the star quarterback he was supposed to be coming out of Clemson. Off night, like you said there, maybe he was just too amped up. But they survived. They got the win they needed, and they're into the playoffs. And like you said, what should be a pretty fun matchup.
Probably, you know, that and the Giant game, the two most competitive on paper to me.
Yep.
The other four, I see clear teams that should win the – well, Dallas-Tampa is a good game, too. I'll give you 3-3. I think Dallas-Tampa can be competitive as well.
So Jacksonville's the four. The five seed is the Chargers. They lost to Denver in a close game. Mike Williams went down. At this point, I think he's expected to play, but we're going to see what happens.
Didn't practice Wednesday. Not sure about Thursday, but didn't practice Wednesday.
If he doesn't, if he's not back, you know, we talked about this so many times. You know,
Brandon Staley.
They need those receivers out there to give Herbert enough players. And when they're all out there, they look great. But without them, it's just an issue. I mean, it really is.
I mean, especially knowing how injury-prone Mike Williams is, why are you playing them that last game?
Yeah, it just makes no sense to me.
I mean, played their starters and struggled, but that doesn't bother me against Denver. Denver's defense is really good.
Yeah.
That might be one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country, in the league, I should say. But it's a useless game, and Brandon Staley leaves the kid out there, and he's got a contusion in his back. Which, again, I know it's not anything broken, but a contusion never sounds good to me. And even if he plays, he's going to be sore. And the first time he gets a hit, who knows how he's going to react to it. It's like, Brandon Staley is going to be the only coach here that gets a team into the playoffs that could get fired if they lose that opener. Yeah. None of these other coaches have a chance of getting fired. I shouldn't say that. Tampa Bay could go away from Todd Bowles just because – he took Bruce Arians' team and ran it into the ground. But those are the only two I would say. But I honestly think that Staley loses to Jacksonville, he's getting canned. I really do.
I mean, when you think of the two differences, I thought Dable was so smart and the Giants organization was smart, sitting down with Daniel Jones and sitting Saquon Barkley. And that just seems like a no-brainer. Who cares if Philly gets the one seed? Doesn't matter to them. The Giants have to watch for themselves.
Yep. Going back to
AFC. I disagreed with that a little bit, but we'll get to that when we talk about the Giants.
Okay. Baltimore lost to Cincinnati 27-16. They're the sixth seed. Miami's the seventh seed. They had that win against the Jets. And at the same time, the Bills took care of business against the Patriots. It's a 35-23 win. The Patriots are out, Kev. You should be happy.
Patriots are out. That means the Dolphins are in. So I'm still not happy.
It should have been Pittsburgh in there. Bad call on Quincy Williams. That's all I'm saying.
I was rooting so hard. You know, I'm sitting at home saying, I want the Jets to lose because it's, you know, a little bit better draft position. Like, I can't root for them to lose to Miami.
No, ever.
That's sad. Let's go. Beat Miami. Come on. And then get Pittsburgh into the playoffs.
And Pittsburgh played a good game.
Well, here's the thing. I'll just make one comment on Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin had a rookie quarterback, and Mitch Trubisky, who we all love going into the season. He had Watt go down for several weeks. He had an offensive line that was basically rebuilt, and he found a way to finish above 500. So every time I hear about a coach that dealt with all these problems, Mike Tomlin finds a way every freaking year. You know what? And also the bad moment of the week was also that when Highsmith makes the sack and he's laying on the ground, and they do the resuscitation thing. I mean, little soon, boys. Little soon. That was about the dumbest thing I think I've seen in quite some time. Well, actually, 2 weeks. Since Thibodeau's laying next to Foles, who looks like he's completely collapsed, and he does start doing snow angels. But I'll take him for his word that he didn't realize, even though he had to move a little bit because the guy was laying there. Just so silly. But I thought that was a little dumb. But Pittsburgh, I think Tomlin just did an amazing job this year.
Tomlin has never had a losing season.
Nope.
His worst record was 500. And, of course, the stat is three head coaches since 1969 for the Steelers.
Where the Texans have four in the last, 6 years?
Yeah. I think four in the last 3 years.
Four in the last 3 years. You're right.
They fired O'Brien, had the interim, had Cully for a year, had Lovie for a year. He was fired, so now they're going on five in 4 years.
The silliest thing in the world, and I hate to say it like this because it's not, I'm not meaning it in a racial way, but this Rooney rule where everybody feels like they have to make that hire, and then they fire the guy in a year. If you're going to give Lovie Smith the job, give him the job. I mean, he had no quarterback all season long. You're going to blame Lovie Smith for this team because no. Davis Mills wasn't getting this team down the field? I thought they played hard for Cully 2 years ago. I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, you just want to fire these guys and hire them, bring them in for a year and fire them? It's out of control down there.
Are you mad because he won and cost him the one pick?
Of course. I mean, Tennessee GM got fired for Brown having a huge game against him. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a listen, the Jets cost themselves Trevor Lawrence. You know, we remember that. But yep. While I'm watching the game, I have a hard time rooting against them. And then afterwards, I'm like, damn it. But during the game, I'm rooting.
You know, people say, oh, the Jets are stupid for winning. You know, like I said, not to harp on it, but these are professional athletes. Yeah, they're getting paid to go out there and play their hardest and try to win the damn game. They don't care about
it. They're trying to get a job for next year. They're trying to keep their jobs.
So I don't want to hear, oh, they should have lost. You know what? These are pro players. They're out there to win.
The lifespan of the average player is a little over 3.5 years. These guys could get cut in one season. They're playing their butts off to make sure they have a job the following year. You can't blame any of these guys for not tanking. Yep. And you know what? Houston goes for two. They get it. Everything went wrong. Indianapolis looked horrible. I mean, there's five coaching vacancies that we know of right now. And I think that, you know, we'll see what else happens going forward if anybody else loses their gig.
Okay, on to the NFC. First six seeds all stayed status quo.
We skip Miami, Buffalo, if you want to stick with the AFC, G.
Well, are we going to talk to each game or are we going to?
We'll go back to the games.
Okay, that's fine.
Philadelphia is the one, San Francisco the two, Minnesota the three, Tampa Bay the four, Dallas the five, the Giants the six. They all stayed status quo. Came down to the last spot, Seattle with a win. They wound up beating the Rams in overtime 19-16. Green Bay still had a shot to get in. And they lose to the Lions 20-16. Seattle is the seventh seed. Any comments on the seedings, guys? You could talk about a little bit about the Giants. We can go into a couple of different things. Kev, why don't you start it?
First of all, starting with the one seed, Philly. They got the gift win with the Giants not playing Jones and Barkley. What I thought was important was at least to get Hurts in there. I'm surprised I think Philly would prefer to have beaten them a little bit more soundly to get Hurts out of there and get Minshew in there.
I agree.
But I think as long as Hurts did not re-injure himself, I think it was important for him to get into the game, to get back into the rhythm, because I'm a firm believer in this rest versus rust thing. And if he didn't play Sunday, then you're looking at 4 weeks off, 5 weeks since he would have played his last game for the first round of the playoffs. And I think that could have been a little bit more rust showing up. So I think it was important for Philly to get Hurts in there and play. Any thoughts?
I agree with you. I mean, a little too much of everybody saying, oh, the Giants kept it. They were down 19-0, all right? The Eagles took their foot off the gas. The Giants made it a little bit of a game in the fourth quarter before everybody starts going nuts. Only reason why I would have wanted to play Daniel Jones just a little bit is let's just remember this. As much as everybody's anointing Daniel Jones the next coming, Tiki Barber saying he could be a top five quarterback in the league next year. Okay, this is what we're hearing in New York, okay? You know, definitely top 10, could be top five. They beat nobody. Their best win was Baltimore. That was their only – and Jacksonville would be the other team that made the playoffs that they beat. And that was before Jacksonville was playing well, and it was Baltimore blew a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. They have no quality wins on their record. I'm not trying to insult Daniel Jones or the Giants. I would have liked to see them have a good drive against Philly because they got mauled against Philly. I would have liked to see them play a little – just. I would have treated it like the first preseason game, get them out there for a series, not Saquon, just right. Jones. Saquon. He's going to run the ball hard. I would have set my first lineup out there, had my scripted 15 plays, scripted 7 plays for the drive, and seen if I can move it. If I didn't move anything and it looked awful, I would have pulled him. And if I did everything right, I would have pulled him. I just would have wanted to see him do something because they were just never really competitive with Philly during the year, in my opinion. That was just my take. Only reason why I would want him out there for a series because I want Daniel to feel good against a team that's that can get after them a little bit. Yep. But it was all the Giants. They gave me a game. And they did. They certainly did. But, you know, in the fourth quarter, it seemed like Philly kind of took the foot off the throttle when it was 19-0 and late in the third. So I didn't think it was the Giant backups played hard. The defense played well. They kept them out of the end zone. They did everything well. I'm not trying to critique it. I thought they played very well, and I agree with you that they didn't need to play. They're not playing for anybody else. They were locked into the sixth seed. No reason to do anything. Finished 9-7-1. Great year for the Giants. Dable, you know, yelling the backup offensive lineman for not opening up holes on the sideline. You got to love it. I mean, you got to love the way this guy goes. I don't think Sally yelled at anybody all year. I kind of enjoyed watching Dable go out there and rip into guys that aren't even going to play in the playoff game unless there's an injury. I mean, if you're a Giant fan, you got to be pumped up. The one thing I'll say, though, when we look at it is the Giants do have a couple of holes, you know, and they're going to have to try to fill those as they go. I mean, the O-line got better, but there's still a little room for improvement there, and they certainly need wide receivers. That's the only thing that you really worry about. Galladay actually had a big touchdown catch. Maybe that spurs him on. Who knows? He's the highest paid guy who hardly plays. So, I don't know. I just – that was my only take on it. But 6-1, half dozen of the other. I just wanted to see Jones making a good day. Jake?
Anything on Seattle? They got in with the overtime win against the Rams.
On Seattle. The Rams, the refs took that game away from the Rams so badly it was ridiculous. There must have been about four or five horrible calls in the second half alone. They wanted Seattle to – listen, I like Pete Carroll. And one of the reasons why when we talk about Salah not losing his job, I remember Pete Carroll blowing that lead and the Jets fired him in 1 year. And now look at him. I know he got fired in New England as well, but he's – taking off as a great coach. I'm not saying Salah will, but I think he has the potential to do so. They gave that game to Seattle. They wanted Seattle to have it. I mean, there was a couple of calls that were just downright hideous in that game. The other thing I'll just make a point on just about the Rams. Now McVay's not sure if he wants to coach there anymore. Can we get more of a millennial coach out there? Well, you bought me everything, so it's great, but now I don't have much of a future, so I'm going to quit now. What the hell is this? You got your Super Bowl. They bought you your players. You wanted it. You got it. Shut up and coach the team. Now, because they're not going to be as good, you want to quit? I got to step away? You're 30, whatever. Get the hell out of here. You're tired? Freaking Belichick's, what, seven? Carroll's older than Belichick. Come on with this millennial crap. Freaking coach the team. You got to be kidding me. Only a millennial would say that. Or maybe a Gen Z now. They would have quit 2 years ago. I mean, whatever. Coach the damn team. Oh, my God. It drives me nuts that he's not sure what he wants to do. Why? Because you're going to lose? If you're a good coach like Mike Tomlin, you stay there and you find a way to win. Enough. Diatribe over. Back to you, Gino.
All right. We'll go through the matchups when we make our picks a little bit later on for the NFL. We're going to switch gears a little bit away from the NFL. We're going to talk a little baseball. A couple of things going on the last week and a half. A couple of trades, a couple of injuries, a couple of signings. A guy signing a third contract. This is the weirdest thing I think I've ever seen. He's now signed his – Carlos Correa is the person we're talking about. He's now signed with a third team this offseason. I've never seen anything like this in my life. Signed with the Giants, signed with the Mets. Now he is back to signing with Minnesota because of the whole medical history problems. I don't know. Kev, talk to me about Correa. Let's start.
Let's hear it from the Mets fan that was all excited a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I was very excited to get him. As we know, it was originally 12 years, 315 was the offer. Physical comes back, and they go, well, we see some problems. We will guarantee the first half of the contract, 6 years, and the first 157.5. And then said, we'll go year to year. If you pass your physical with that leg, we'll pay another year. And that was not good enough for Boris. As a Met fan, I look at it going, Steve Cohen is willing to spend stupid money on these contracts, but he is not spending stupidly, if that makes sense. He will take a step back. He will spend whatever money he feels like he has to, but not be stupid about it by guaranteeing this guy with potential leg problems 12 years. He'll guarantee six. He'll guarantee something shorter, but he's not going to go all the way out to 12 years. So I think that's one thing that at least it shows a little bit of restraint by Cohen. And that, yeah, I'm probably spinning for it as a Met fan. But to me, it also frees up money looking at next year for the big guy. For Ohtani. I'm watching Darren. I'm watching Gino.
Well, I'm going to just say this. Probably spinning it for the Met fan. Probably. I agree. The Twins came in with 6 years, 200. He passed his physical somehow.
Yep.
You know, you can't blame him for taking the extra $43 million. I'm sure Boris went back to Cohen and said, you want to match this? And he said no, because the relationship between Boris and Cohen is good. So you would think that he had that chance. But at the same time, yes, you're hoping the kid comes in and plays third, or you have Escobar still. You know, you still have options and stuff like that. Obviously, with Correa in the lineup, you felt like, wow. Our offense is going to be better than anybody else's by far. Yeah. Still, what is it? Still 100 million more than any other team in the league payroll right now. So with Correa, it's down to just 100. So he is willing to spend money. And listen, you know what? As a Met fan, enjoy it. As Yankee fans, I enjoyed it for years. It's okay. If there was a player we wanted, we got him. And we still do occasionally. We still get Cole. We still get the guys we want. So I can't complain about it. Listen, the Correa thing with the ankle, who knows? Now he's going to make more money and play in obscurity in Minnesota, where he's going to win every year between 78 and 84 games. Congratulations, Carlos. You made $43 million more. The league will never let you take an offer less, because then you'll ruin it for every other player. So they used to hate Tony Gwynn for always wanting to stay in San Diego. They used to hate Kirby Puckett for staying in Minnesota, because they would get offers for more and they would say no. And they would represent themselves, and it was a big to-do. This is a little bit more of he did what he had to do, and the Mets did what they had to do.
Yep. To me, what they need to look at is, at least in the first half, I think Beatty gets a real crack at getting at least the platoon, the long side of the platoon at third base with Escobar.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking to see if Alvarez is ready defensively behind the plate. If he is, he's in the opening day lineup. And if the two kids can provide enough punch in the lineup, you've improved. If not, this means the Mets have to be aggressive at the trade deadline this year. And if they're missing the bat, they have to go out and get one. It can't be Daniel Vogelback and Darren Ruff at this trading deadline.
You didn't love that move, both of them?
Oh.
I like anyone that looks as fat as me in a uniform. Anyway, we move on. I love Vogelback.
Well, Vogie was a nice little pickup. But
Nothing little about Vogie.
Yeah, but it had to be more. And this year, you can't make that type of minor deal if the Mets need that one power bat. Who's available? We'll see.
Well, it depends on who falls out of it, who gets injuries, all that stuff. Vogelback, by the way, you know, reminded me of looking at CC Sabathia when he used to wear the Indians orange uniform. He had that real slim down look. Anyway.
So other than that, we had some signings, some trades, a couple of names out there. Gregory Soto got traded to the Phillies. The Dodgers traded for Miguel Rojas from Florida. I'll go through a couple. I'll give you guys a chance. The Red Sox lost Trevor Story to a major injury. A couple other things, and that is Trevor Bauer was let go by the Dodgers. Nelson Cruz signed with the Padres. A couple of other guys, Cueto signed, Pollock signed, Brandon Belt signed with the Blue Jays. An underrated signing, I'll tell you right now, is the A signing, the Japanese pitcher Shintaro Fujinami. It has been rumored, and that's the only way I can put it, that he has a great splitter. Not a good splitter, a great splitter. So he's going to go to Oakland. We're going to see him pitch with the A's. We'll see him pitch, you know, in a good ballpark for pitchers. Apparently, you're going to see like 90% on the ground. That every pitch he throws basically is a ground ball. We'll see how he does. Any comments on any of these moves, guys? Darren?
Well, Nelson Cruz is just going to be a part-time 19th-year guy for the Padres. You know, he'll be a DH type against lefties. Maybe he'll play against both if he's pretty hot. The Story thing is the big deal. Having the Tommy John surgery, you don't even, you know, he may not even be able to play shortstop if he comes back by the end of the season. and the amount of money they gave him last year, he only played, what, under 100 games? It was like 94 games last year. This is a real, I mean, if you're a Red Sox fan, if this happened to a Met or a Yankee in the second year of a contract, we'd be flipping out about it. I'm sure they're flipping out up in Boston for the same reason. It just, I happen to think that that's the biggest blow right now. The other thing that happened today or yesterday was they moved the field, the center field fence in at Comerica by 10 feet. So now they're trying to make it more of a hitter's park. But I think the Trevor Story one, out of all the moves you mentioned, I agree with you on the A's pitcher. I can't pronounce him, but I've heard nothing but good things. And I think about, Fujiyama, whatever the hell. And I think that this Trevor Story thing was huge. Kev?
Yeah.
The move I hate because I'm a Met fan was Phillies getting Soto. That's a nice weapon out there in that bullpen. They needed bullpen help. They needed late inning help. And he just solidifies that bullpen a lot.
He's a nice pitcher. I just always worry about guys in the bullpen. It's like they're good every other year. Hopefully he's not good this year.
Yeah.
Do either of you guys think Trevor Bauer winds up pitching any meaningful innings this year for anyone?
No.
I don't think so at all.
I kind of agree with you guys. I just want to see what your opinion was.
I think the Dodgers did the right thing in releasing him. He'll catch on somewhere because somebody needs a pitcher, but probably not until the offseason after this year is done or he gets a minor league contract late and chance to go to camp. I think that's the best he can hope for.
And one other thing on the Red Sox, you know, the Story injury comes basically a week and a half right after they just gave Devers all that money to stay. You know, that it's got to be a big blow. You give Devers because you want these guys on that side of the infield, and then bang, Story goes down now. It's going to be tough. I mean, it's a tough injury now. So we'll see what happens. All right, any other baseball stuff before we move on, boys? All right.
Nope.
Kev, want to talk a little NHL?
NHL. So every team's played at least 40 games, so we've reached the halfway point. And I thought I'd take a look at the playoff standings a little bit, too. For those who may not realize it, who are not hockey fans, two conferences, Eastern and Western, two divisions in each league, in each conference, top three in each division, plus the next two best teams in the conference. So one division can get three teams, the other division can get five.
Let's make it more complicated, shall we?
Yeah.
The fact that they change divisions every single year is what makes it more complicated. One year you're playing this team in your division, the next year you're playing in that. The NHL has got no consistency. Sorry, guys.
Well, the Eastern Conference has been pretty good. Western, I have no idea who's in the two divisions in the West.
I know the West. I can help you with that.
Go ahead.
But if you look in the East, the Atlantic Division, it looks like there's three teams that have separated themselves. Of course, you've got Boston, who has been the best team in the league all year.
Red hot.
They are on a 14-game point streak, 11-0-3. Clearly the class of the league. Toronto's second in that division at 57 points. Tampa's third with 51. You have to go all the way down to Buffalo with 42 points for the fourth place team. They are pretty far back in the wild card already. So I think it's going to be those three in the Atlantic. The Metropolitan Division, right now you're looking at Carolina, the Devils, the Rangers will be the three from the division making it. Washington, Pittsburgh are the two wild cards. The Islanders are a point back. So right now you've got 10 points separating those six teams. In the Metropolitan, I think five of those six make it.
I think that's a fair analysis. The one thing, and just with points, and we'll get into it as we get deeper into hockey. Enough of this, overtime is a three-point game, but regular season's a regulation game's a two-point game. If you win a regulation game, you get 3 points. If you're going to make a game 3 points, it's got to be 3 points for every damn game. You can't just have some games where I got two and you got one, and other games where I got two and you got none. It's either three or it's two. Either nobody gets a point or the win is a three-point win. You want teams to go for it in the last 2 minutes of a game? Make it 3 points. That's what you'll get. It's ridiculous. I hate the way the NHL does this. Drives me nuts.
1,000% agree.
Out in the West, I don't have the standings in front of me. I know that you probably know it a little bit better than me, Kev.
Yeah, I was looking. Central Division, you've got Dallas, Winnipeg, Minnesota is your top three.
Eno's got a point. I'm sorry.
1 point on the East would be nice to see the Devils, the Rangers, and the Islanders all in the playoffs, by the way.
It's always great when we have local hockey. I agree.
And it's close. I mean, at this point, they're right on the cusp of all three. So, but yeah. Go ahead. Move on to the West, Kev. Sorry.
Like I said, 10 points between those six teams.
Yeah. And Washington's won like 7 of their last 9, and that's what got them into it. All it takes is a hot streak, and all of a sudden you're in the top three in your division. It's crazy in hockey like that.
I think out West, you've got more togetherness there. Like I said, Central, you've got Dallas, Winnipeg, Minnesota. Pacific, you've got Vegas, LA, and Seattle. Then the wild cards is 5 teams for those three spots, for the 2 spots.
Yeah.
Calgary, Edmonton, St. Louis, Nashville, Colorado. Those 5 teams are separated by 4 points. So right now you look out west, it's really wide open. Even from Dallas and Vegas, who both have 56 points, down to Colorado, it's only 13 points really separating 11 teams.
And I think Colorado's got like 2 games in hand on everybody in that little group.
So the West looks like a dogfight the whole way.
And Calgary decided to not show up against Chicago and St. Louis and blow 2 games and lose them both in overtime. So instead of getting real points, I'm getting the 1 point out of the 3.
You got to lose a point.
Oh, it's so ridiculous with this stupid rule.
So I got an interesting.
I deserve none.
Anyway. I got an interesting point for you guys.
Yep.
Has the NHL made it too easy for the expansion teams to become relevant quickly? Because right now we're looking at Seattle and Vegas, and we knew Vegas 2 years ago when they came in, bang, they were right at the top. Now Seattle, you know, have they just at one point it was so difficult for these teams to become relevant quickly. And now they may have made it too easy for them to become relevant so quickly. So, Darren?
You should have to draft David Need. You should have to sit there and go get Jeff Conine. You should have to sit there and struggle for 4 years and fill your arena anyway. I'm being honest. Maybe I'm a little harsh about it.
No.
But I think that a rebuilding team and a friend – listen, you should have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with John McKay and a 5-year plan. You should have this type of thing. It shouldn't be this easy. It should be that you have to work with, you don't get to choose from a litany of great players. I don't know. I like it harder. That's just my take. Kev?
No, you're right. You guys have a power ranking?
I do have a power ranking. Do you have one, Jay?
Yeah, go ahead, Darren.
All right. Let me turn to that page because I wasn't ready because I'm okay. Here we go. Boston 1. It doesn't even seem like it's that close to me.
It's not.
And then, so I'll go right to 3 because I'm just kidding. Carolina 2. Dallas, I still have it 3. I kept Toronto in there as 4. And I put Seattle as my 5, 7-2-1 in the last 10 with Washington just off because they won 6 in a row. So that was kind of my take in the NHL. G?
I have Boston 1. I have Toronto 2, Carolina 3, Vegas 4, Washington 5. And sneaking up in these rankings, not there yet, is Buffalo with this 8-2 streak that they're on right now. They're creeping up little by little right now. They get trying to get back into it. Kev?
Yeah, pretty similar on the top. Boston, of course, 1. I've got Toronto, Dallas, Carolina, and Vegas in that order.
Darren.
There's the power ratio. College Darren. Basketball, huh?
College basketball. You got anything on college basketball?
I got a few things. Okay, listen. I mean, it's the most topsy-turvy year to start in a while. I got 2 games on over my head. I got, I'm watching this sport like going crazy. Top 8 teams right now in the country, I'd say Houston 1, Kansas 2, Purdue 3, Tennessee 4, Alabama 5, UCLA 6, Gonzaga 7. I'll just stop it at 7. I had UConn in there. They lost last night. Up at I think it was up at Marquette, so we'll knock them out a little bit. The team that had the monster week was Kansas State. They had a monster week. They had road wins at Texas and Baylor, not an easy thing to do. Scored 116 on Texas. Chris Beard, by the way, got fired at Texas for I guess inappropriate, whatever the hell. But for Kansas State, who was picked last, picked 10th in the Big 12 to start the season. They have a 5'6" point guard, Marquise Noel, who's playing great. They also had only one other player that stayed with the roster. Everybody else was either a recruit or a transfer. And, you know, and they had a home win over Oklahoma State. Providence has won 9 in a row, playing outstanding, including a win over Connecticut, okay? Iowa State is playing great. They're beating everybody up. Their only losses with the UConn and the Cy-Hawk Classic against Iowa. They got bombed. But outside of that, they've been great, and they won at TCU the other day. And then Rutgers was really great until Sunday when they kind of had a little slip-up against Iowa. Big East is way down, especially with Villanova not being good. Villanova lost to DePaul this week, something that should not happen. Washington State went into the McHale Center and stunned Arizona. And one of the most interesting things to talk about, well, two things. The last two undefeated teams were New Mexico and UConn. Then they both found a way to lose two of their next three games. So now, and then UConn has actually lost three out of four now. College of Charleston played, UNC Wilmington this week. 2-point win for Charleston. This was probably the game of the year on January 11th in the CAA. And the reason why is College of Charleston is ranked. They weren't picked to win the division, but right now they're 17-1. Wilmington was 14-3 going in. They fall to 14-4. Charleston's only loss was at North Carolina in Chapel Hill in the second game of the season when North Carolina was ranked 1. So they haven't played a ton of great teams, but they did beat Virginia Tech. They're a really good squad. This was probably the biggest challenge that they were going to get in the conference. I'm not saying they can't lose at Hofstra. Towson was picked to win it. They can still lose there. And Delaware is pretty good as well. But the fact of the matter remains that this might have been the game that they could have lost. Wilmington took it down to the wire, lost by 2. Just one of those things. Just a mid-major to keep an eye on. College of Charleston's pretty good. Pat Kelsey's a really good coach. Second year there, but he's won elsewhere also. Big games that are going on this weekend. Kansas State plays TCU. That's 11 against 17. It's a big matchup. Providence goes to Creighton. Creighton's like 9-8, but they play everybody tough. That's not an easy game. Providence is 19 in the country. 14, Iowa State goes to Kansas, number 2. Big matchup. 24, Duke, who had to escape Pittsburgh this week, they go to Clemson, who's in first place in the ACC. Not ranked. And then finally, the other one I'm looking at was Marquette at Xavier. That's 25 versus 12. There were a lot of good games. Alabama went into Arkansas and won handily this week. A lot of interesting things. And later on tonight, we have Gonzaga versus BYU. That will be a test for Gonzaga. That's kind of like my little take on it. And there was a big win for the University of South Carolina. They went to a Kentucky team, and they got themselves up to 500. Kev, any thoughts?
Not too often lately that South Carolina's gotten into Kentucky and win.
Well, nobody goes to give up and wins. That's a great win no matter what.
Obviously, Kentucky is just awful this year.
Kentucky, and Duke, there's a lot of teams that aren't what they were.
Yeah. South Carolina, I know, has a good freshman, G.G. Jackson. That's about it.
They're not a bad team. They're just in a really tough league.
Yep.
Everybody's pretty good in that league, so it'll be interesting to see.
So what do you think? Some of the NCAA, one of the committees offered a recommendation that maybe up to 25% of participating schools should be in some sort of conference tournament in any sport, which would mean 96 teams possibly in the NCAA tournament. Are you in favor of expanding it?
No.
I think it's absurd.
Too much already. This is all coaches that want this so they can save more jobs. That's all it is.
Yep.
Listen, we talked about it last week, G. We're going to see more 17 and 14, 18 and 16 teams getting in, which was unheard of. Used to be unheard of when you had 12 losses and got in. Then one year somebody had 13 and you're like, oh my God. I remember when I was younger, Villanova got in at 16-13 the year before they won it all in 85, the year of 84. And it was because they beat Georgetown for one of those wins. Otherwise, it was unheard of. It really just doesn't add up to me. Too many teams. I think they have it. I thought 68 was going too far. I liked it at 64. But, I'll settle on the 68. I think we should stop there. G, thoughts?
Yeah, let's stop it at 68. We're getting out of control. Do we really need the ninth team out of the Conference USA who was horrible? It just, you know. All right, from college basketball, let's do some NBA, Kev.
Yeah, so again, approaching the halfway point here. A couple of things. Big news for the Brooklyn Nets. They remain hot, winners of 9 out of 10. But the big news is Kevin Durant injured the other night. He should looks like he's out 2 to 4 weeks with basically a sprained knee. So it's going to be interesting to see if Brooklyn can hold the fort while he's out. The other one interesting stat I had from the week, the Miami Heat won a game by a point the other night thanks to going 40 for 40. From the foul line. Set an NBA record. Most makes without a miss in a game. Talk about clutch free throw shooting. Looking at the playoffs picture there in the NBA Eastern Conference, it looks like you've got sort of a top five separating themselves. Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Cleveland. Then you've got the next tier, 6, 7, 8. You've got Indy, the Knicks, and Miami. Remember a couple years ago, the NBA changed. They do have this play-in. 7 plays 10, 8 plays 9 for, you know, like a little 2-game set or something, and then they go to the main playoffs. So battling there looks like Atlanta, Chicago, Toronto, and Washington. So it looks like in the Eastern Conference you do have a little bit more of a set tiers. There's like 3 tiers of teams and then the bottom of the barrel. Western Conference, I'm looking the top 3, Denver, Memphis, New Orleans. They're about 2.5 games within each other. And then from 4 to 13, they are separated by 4.5 games going into Wednesday night's game. So wide open. Team that looked like they were out of the Golden State struggling, but they are 20-21, which right now is good for the 8th seed. And believe it or not, the Lakers, even though they're struggling along at 19-22, they were only a half game out of the playoffs as of Wednesday night. So obviously, plenty of basketball to be played, especially out west. I think the Eastern Conference is a little bit more set. Overall, my power rankings, I've got Boston 1. They struggled a little couple weeks ago, but they've seemed to right the ship. Still have the best record in the league. 2, 3, and 4, to me, you've got 3 teams tied with the second best record. I'll go Denver, Memphis, 2 and 3, then Brooklyn 4, only because KD got hurt. Otherwise, it would have had Brooklyn 2. And then the 5th seed, only because they've been playing a little bit better lately. They've won 7 of their last 10. I've got Philly as a 5. You could also consider Milwaukee, Cleveland, and New Orleans, and you can make a case for any of those 3. Darren, Gino, anything?
Yeah, I have Boston 1. I think that's Boston number 1 in hockey and in and in basketball, but the football team fell off this year. So, it was, you know, the way it works. Brooklyn, I kept them at 2 until they start losing without Durant. I'm not knocking them down. I put Denver as my 3, Memphis as my 4, and I just put Milwaukee just ahead of New Orleans as my 5.
Yep.
I'm very similar to you guys. I have Boston 1. I have Denver 2, Brooklyn 3, Memphis 4. The only difference I had is I have Cleveland as my 5 right now, but again, put Milwaukee in there, put New Orleans. You could put a couple of different teams in that 5 spot, and it's they're going to be interchangeable. The one team I think just keep – they're not in the top 5, but they're right there right now. They're playing so well, and that's Dallas. Dallas is just really playing well. They're 8-2 in their last 10. You know, Luka Doncic's got them playing some really good ball right now, so we'll see where they wind up in the groupings.
We finished the NBA.
Kev, one more point.
Oh, I didn't know you had a point.
Give him a minute. He's coming up.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, what's going to be interesting is coming down the second half of the year, the MVP race to me right now looks like 2-man. It's Doncic, and it's the guy from Milwaukee.
Antetokounmpo.
Yeah. Jokic.
Giannis.
Jokic.
Oh, he's not from Milwaukee.
I mean, Denver. I'm sorry. He's won the last couple of years, and trying to go for three-peat. And his stats are he's getting up near averaging a triple-double.
Yep.
And Luka's going to be right there with his numbers, too. It's going to be an interesting MVP race, I think, between those two.
I mean, you know, don't discount Jason Tatum out of that race.
I was just going to say, you're throwing guys like Tatum, Giannis.
Yeah. No, you know, and if the Brooklyn Nets stay around, you know, Durant or Kyrie could also get consideration. And Zion, when healthy, has been really good.
He's been really good.
A lot of good players out there.
Okay. That wraps up some NBA. Let's move into NFL. We're going to talk about our picks as we go through these games. So NFL has decided to give us a Monday night playoff game for the wild card round. So we have two
last Saturdays. Year also. And it was a thriller. They had the Arizona team that got shut out by the Rams.
We got two Saturday, three Sunday, one Monday. We'll start with the Saturday games. The 4:30 game is Seattle at San Francisco. San Francisco -9.5. Kev, you can give us your pick. Talk a little bit about it. We'll get into it if we have to. We'll go through each game.
Yep. Well, obviously, San Fran, they've won 10 in a row. Even with Brock Purdy, the offense is humming. He's got 13 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. It was nice for them to get back Deebo Samuel and Elijah Mitchell this weekend. That just adds to the weapons. Seattle had lost 5 of 6. They beat the Mike White-led Jets with those fractured ribs. They got a gift from the referees in that Rams game for overtime to make the playoffs. San Fran's beaten them twice, 27-7 and 21-13. I think the 49ers win this one very easily. I see them covering the 9.5.
Okay.
Are you going, Darren?
Yeah, I'll go next. 49ers, they played twice. 49ers won 27-7 in the opener. They won 21-13 Seattle scored late to make it that close. Purdy looks really good. I mean, last pick of the draft. I mean, you can't write this stuff. Elijah Mitchell back. Deebo's healthy. You know, Kittle looks like he hasn't looked in like 3 years. You know, and we're not even talking about McCaffrey yet. I mean, they got a lot of weapons. The big question, and the defense is great. The big question is going to be how Purdy stands up to a little adversity when he actually faces it. I don't think this is the game. San Francisco's 9.5-point favorite, over-under is 42.5 in this one. I think San Francisco covers it. I think they cover it relatively easily. And I can see the game being an over, mostly because I think San Francisco is going to put up at least 30. So I'm going to say that this game goes over and San Francisco wins by at least 2 scores.
I'm going to agree with both of you. I think this is San Francisco's game. This is the warm up for the next game. I don't think Seattle gives them much trouble. I think this is 14. This could be 17. I could see this being a little higher. When Purdy is back there and now he's got all his weapons. Provided, you know, they're saying McCaffrey's a little bit beat up, but he's going to be fine. He's got all these weapons. I think San Francisco wins this by 14. I think this is, you know, way up there, 34-20 or something. I could see this going right through. So second game on Saturday is an 8:15 start. The Chargers at Jacksonville, the 5 at 4. Darren, why don't you start this one?
All right. Jags are hot, okay, but they did escape last week. Titans led a lot of that game. This is the first big game for a lot of the Jag players, to be perfectly honest. You know, a lot of them have not played in this type of pressure, but the coach has. And Peterson is, you know, has gotten his team through it and won a Super Bowl. Same thing going on with the quarterback, you know, Trevor Lawrence was big in college. We'll see if that translates to the big game here. The injury to Mike Williams is really a crucial point in this game. If he plays, you know, the Chargers are a totally different team because he's a matchup nightmare. So now it really is going to come down to that to me. I'm going to Jags crushed him first time they played. The quarterback matchup is awesome. The two guys are built about the same size, same everything. Should be really, really cool. I think the Chargers have just immense talent. I think they win the game. It's a night game, but the weather won't be a problem where they're playing. I think the Chargers are favored by 2. The over-under is 47.5. I'm going to take the Chargers and the over. Kev, go ahead.
All right. I think the Jaguars coming in hot. They won 5 in a row. I know the Chargers actually won 4 in a row before they lost to Denver last week. Probably should be the most fun game of the weekend, most competitive game of the weekend. Go back and forth on this one. I'm going to take Jacksonville plus the 2.
I'm taking the Chargers in this one. I think they have too much. I think Herbert's too much. I think Jacksonville has played really well to get in. I think this is a big test for them. They're going to have to contain Eckler. They're going to have to contain Herbert. They're going to have to look to contain Keenan Allen and some of these receivers. If Mike Williams plays, I'm not sure this is even a close game if Mike Williams is playing in this game. I like the Chargers minus the 2. Third game of the weekend is the 1 o'clock start on Sunday. It's Miami at Buffalo. Buffalo favored by 13. We already know there's no Tua in this game. It already came out that Tua isn't playing in this game. So Buffalo minus 13. Darren, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, no Bridgewater either. So we'll see Skylar Thompson going again. Be honest. You know, Miami squeaked by in their game. Buffalo did not play great in their game either. 2 kickoff returns. You know, the whole thing with Nyheim Hines with the kickoff 3 years and 3 months after the last time they had a kickoff return, all with the number 3. I think it's an emotional, game for Buffalo. I don't think they've looked great, but I don't think that the Dolphins are going to pose much of a threat. I like Buffalo laying the 13. I think the game ends up as an under. Under the 43.5, I like Buffalo relatively easily in this game.
I generally agree with you, Darren. The only thing I would give Miami a chance is their defense is okay. I think they do manage to keep it close enough that they may get that late touchdown to cover. I think you have a chance for backdoor cover here. I think 13 is just a little bit too much. The fact that Skylar at least has played a couple of games hasn't looked great, but at least he's played a little bit. I'm going to take the Dolphins plus the 13.
Another game, I'm not sure it's going to be close. I don't think the Dolphins have enough with Skylar. I think they're outmanned in this game. I think Buffalo takes over. I like Buffalo to win. I think this is like a 17-point game at least. Buffalo minus the 13 is my pick. Fourth game of the weekend is the 4:30 Sunday game. It is the New York Giants at Minnesota. Minnesota favored by 3. Darren?
All right. These two teams played a great game a couple weeks ago. They really did. Came down to a 61-yard field goal. 2 first-year coaches that got their teams all the way to this point. You got to be happy. Both franchises got to feel really good about their coaches. Giants had the best record against the spread of any team in the league this year at 13-4. Minnesota's dynamic offensively. They're not great defensively. The Giants are solid but not spectacular on either side of the ball. Vikings are a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 48, and I'm going to take the Vikings to cover this game. I think it's a 1-score game, but I don't think it's 3. I think they're going to find a way to win it by 6. I have 30-24 in my head, which puts it as an over to 48. I have a lot of overs this week. I just think that the Giants haven't won the games against the really good teams. It'll be interesting if they this game will be very competitive, very close throughout. I just think that Minnesota scores late and wins it.
The Vikings only play close games.
So do the Giants.
Or when they lose, they get blown out. Remember, they're 13-4. They've been outscored by 3 points this year, which is just mind-boggling stat.
Yeah.
I think that performance 3 weeks ago when they lost on the 61-yard field goal gives the Giants enough confidence. I think having last week off, especially for Saquon, gets him refreshed. I can see Saquon going off and having a big game. And I think the Giants hang in there and cover the 3 points. I think they actually pull this one out.
Okay. I think this is Minnesota's coming out party. They've been playing close games all year. And I'm telling you, I think this is Minnesota. Take Minnesota minus the 3. I think Minnesota wins this by 10. I can see this being 24-14. I think they're going to hold down Daniel Jones enough, force Barkley to not be able to run the ball, and they win this by 10. I take Minnesota minus the 3. Fifth game of the weekend is an 8:15 Sunday start. It's Baltimore at Cincinnati. We talked enough about this earlier. Darren, Baltimore at Cincinnati. Take it away.
Lamar Jackson still not practicing, okay? Huntley's on track to play but hasn't thrown. Baltimore's D is very good. Cincinnati's a very gifted offensive team. You know, the spread on this game has fluctuated a lot. So it went up to, I think, 8 now. It started off, I think, at like 6 or 5.5. But I don't think Lamar's going to play. I don't know if Lamar will ever play again for the Baltimore Ravens. I think that he will play somewhere else next year. I don't think he wants to come back. Again, with Cincinnati, the Ravens can run the ball. They play great D. Cincinnati, a little banged up on the offensive line. Obviously, I think Huntley will end up playing quarterback and not Anthony Brown. I'm going to take the Ravens to cover with the Bengals to win. I think that the Ravens keep this to a very low scoring, you know, 17-10, 17-13 type game. I'm going to take the Ravens, and I'm going to take the under the 40.5.
Like you said, without Jackson in there, you're that left with either Huntley or Brown, and Huntley hasn't thrown yet. Not sure what he did today in practice. The Bengals have looked good the last two games they've played for the first half. Both games they've came up the second half and looked a little flat. But I think this being the playoff game here, I think Cincinnati will come out and win by 2 touchdowns. I've got Cincinnati covering the 8.5.
Kev, I agree with you. I think this is Cincinnati by 2 touchdowns. Baltimore with no Lamar, not a lot of good receivers right now. Cincinnati's going to play tough on the line. They're going to force them to do some things that they don't want to do. I think this is Cincinnati minus the 8. I'll take Cincinnati. And the sixth game of the weekend is Monday night, 8:15. It's Dallas at Tampa. Dallas minus 2.5 is the line at the moment. Darren, what do you think of Dallas, Tampa Bay?
Well, these two teams also met early in the year, 19-3 win for the Bucs. Tampa has not been good most of the year, but they played better down the stretch. They actually played well for a half, and then they took out their starters. Tom Brady seems like he's playing a little bit better than he was, and they're getting healthier. Their old line's getting healthy, while the Cowboys, their offensive line seems to be getting a little bit weaker. They're the ultimate. The Cowboys are the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde team. They can win this game by 30 or lose this game by 20. You just never know what you're going to get. It's like that box of chocolates from Forrest Gump. I'm going to take Tampa at home, and I'm going to take the 2.5 points, and I'm going to say that this game stays under, but I am going to take – I'm going to take Tampa Bay.
What was the under, Darren?
Under is 45.5.
Tampa Bay, nice. Jeff?
You look at it, and you would think Cowboys should win this game. But you dig a little deeper. Dak, 15 interceptions to lead the league, and he missed 5 games. And this is Tom freaking Brady.
You're not picking Tom. You're not picking Tom.
I'm picking Tom. I'm taking the Buccaneers plus the 2.5. Tom freaking Brady will pull this game out of his ass somehow and lead him to a victory, and on to the next week.
Okay, and for Geno's final pick, I'm taking my 6th favorite to win. I think Dallas pulls this out. They win by a field goal late. I think my line from the preseason, not preseason, but after week 1 of the NFL, that after the Dak injury, that Dallas would not make the playoffs, still comes back and bites me as Dallas gets past the wild card round.
The Geno hot take.
I'm going to agree with you, and I think this is like 27-20 and Brady comes down and they tie the game and it's 27-27 and Dallas comes down for a late field goal. It's 30-27. I think Dallas covers the 2.5. I'll take Dallas minus the 2.5 for my pick. And that is the wild card round, guys.
So have we improved at all in picks?
We have not.
We have to give everybody an update next week on that.
The way we are very all over the board here, one of us has got to have a good week.
We are basically picking at about 47%, Darren.
Well, we're getting closer to the 50% mark. We were down in the low 40s earlier. We're getting slightly better. So, I guess just one last thing in the NFL. Kingsbury, Lovey Smith, Colts, Broncos, and Carolina all have job openings. We'll see if anybody else goes down. The Rams could have an opening. Like I said, the Chargers could even have an opening. You never know what happens there. Outside of that, you guys have anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
God, I sounded wonderful tonight.
It's all right, Kev. Kev, we're excited. I'll start with this in my closing. It's great to have you back. It's great for the three of us to be talking about this stuff again. I thought I was pissing you off when you started going on coughing fits and leaving the room. So I thought you were mad at me at first. But the bottom line is this, guy. We are the Sports Kings from Queens, okay? Darren, along with Kevin and Gino, love talking to you guys about the world of sports. Check us out on social media. Check us out. Download our podcast anywhere you can get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be TuneIn, whether it be Spotify. Ask us questions. Share our stuff. Let people know about us. We enjoy doing the show. We hope you enjoy listening to it as well. We've covered a little more hockey today. Maybe we'll get a little bit more in depth with that as we go. Same thing with college basketball. Now that college football is done, we don't have to talk about that until signing day and stuff like that. But there's always stuff coming up with baseball, so we'll keep that going. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.